Thanks for downloading this podcast, which is for personal use only. All contents are copyright Radio Show Limited and must not be reproduced, rebroadcast, or used in any form without permission. For contact details, go to www.radiolemon.com.
Hello there, this is John Heindorf, and we're off on another trip away for one of our inside looks to a part of motor racing or the automotive industry. And for this one, we've had to come quite some distance all the way to the west coast of America, where we're looking at Tesla Motors.
This is Inside on RadioLeMans.com.
So here we are then, outside of Tesla Motors in Fremont in California. And as I head towards the door and step inside into the reception area, I am greeted by a familiar face and a familiar voice to RadioLeMans.com, none other than Chris Burritt. Hello, Chris.
Hello, John, and welcome to my new home.
What are you doing here then?
I've just started in the last month as Vice President of Vehicle Engineering at Tesla Motors.
Tesla. Tell me a little bit about Tesla. Many people will immediately associate the name with electric-powered sports cars.
Yes, they would, and certainly in the UK they would, because we did the Tesla Roadster, started best part of nearly 10 years ago, I guess.
Is it that long?
Yeah, and that was really, for Tesla, the proof of concept for an electric car. So how do you get the range, how do you get the performance? And that was the starting point for where we've got to now. So the first point on the journey.
Now, where we are now is clearly not where the company began, and we'll talk about this facility at the moment, but it's huge, is the first thing that I noticed. I was not expecting something this big. I wasn't expecting two men in a shed either, I should say, immediately, but this is not where the genesis of the Tesla brand started.
No, it started, we're now in Silicon Valley, basically, so we're at tech center of USA, but it started actually in Michigan. A few design guys, they moved from there to LA, where the design studio now is in Hawthorne, and then up to our corporate headquarters, which is over the valley in Palo Alto, the other side of the San Francisco Bay. And then ultimately we moved into this factory here, and you said it's huge. The length of the factory is just about a mile and a half, so it's a pretty long factory.
The original Roadster, then, that was built where? Has it always been a West Coast manufacturing?
Yeah, well, it was part built in the UK and then part built here. So it was basically, the final assembly was over here in Palo Alto. So that really was the start of when we started building cars at Tesla.
Not a cottage industry as such, but clearly not a volume manufacturer in those days, but always working towards looking further down the line, and somewhere down the line, as you say, 10 years ago, in turning Tesla into something very different than how it started.
Absolutely. Well, I guess the analogy that should be made is to think of us like a startup company. So we are a technical startup company. We just so happen to be in the automotive industry. And we have moved into Silicon Valley, which is the home of startup companies in the US. And here we are being able to make, you know, Model S now in some numbers, up to 20,000 cars this year, and, you know, a very successful product as well.
Now, tell me a little bit about the facility that we're standing in now. We're in what looks, to all intents and purposes to me, like a corporate headquarters, like a big car plant. It also looks like it's been here for a little while, if I'm honest.
It has been here for a little while. I mean, it's been branded as Tesla. So originally, this plant was the Toyota GM joint venture NUMMI factory, and Tesla took this over finally in 2010. So obviously when GM Toyota closed the place down in 2008, it was basically cotton-wooled, and then Tesla came along and took it over, and we've made it our new factory, our new home for building cars.
So what are we going to see today, and what should I be looking out for as you take us behind the scenes? I'm guessing there's quite a lot of things that are specific to Tesla, and I'm not sure if people normally do a factory tour here. So.
We do, actually. We do factory tours. We bring customers here. We allow them to come round and either see their cars being built. We have friends and family who come round. So it's effectively, we have a nice open house tradition here, if you like. But what you'll see is our body in white line, you'll see the size of the factory that we've got. You'll see the areas that we're using. You'll see the areas we're not using. You'll also see our final assembly area. You'll see the road test area that we have inside for squeaks and rattles, water test, all this sort of thing. And then I'll take you finally to have a quick peek, and you can only see through the door at the powertrain assembly facility, because that's without your US passport, I can't let you in there, I'm afraid.
The inside stories on the teams, suppliers and drivers. This is Inside on RadioLeMans.com.
So with Chris Porritt now here at Tesla Motors in California, and we stepped through into the factory, not looking much like a factory as in the traditional sense of the word here, Chris. I sense that there's not much manufacturing going on in this part of the plant.
Well, no, there's not, John. You're absolutely right. So this used
call
to
me
be
perceptive.
Yeah, you're definitely perceptive, even after a long flight. This used to be a Toyota GM joint venture factory called NUMMI, which used to build 250,000 cars a year. Tesla's building 20,000 cars a year. So we only need to use a very small percentage of it. So we've basically taken up an area in the factory a bit further away that we'll show you later that is specifically for Tesla, and the rest of it is pretty much as Toyota moved out. So it's
which was when
it was in 2000 and, well, they finished I think in 2007 2008. Tesla took ownership in 2010, so it's obviously lying idle for quite a long time. And we can still see in here all the overhead gantries that was used for the Toyota factory. There's all the overhead areas there. There's a piece sitting over here where the production line goes up and over, so it would be a high area where, yeah, you know, they'd be doing some work on the underside of the car,
yeah,
or a body frame would be coming up over the top to meet up with another part of the car. But it basically is exactly as Toyota walked out.
Now, again, it's this perceptive straight. I lived with a detective for a lot of years, my father, of course. It doesn't seem massively sensible to move into a place this big if you're not going to use it at some stage in the future, because it's expensive storage at the moment, and there are various bits and pieces here of car parts. But clearly there would be no point moving in here if at some stage in the future of Tesla that it wasn't going to be part of the plans.
Yeah, well, you know, as I said, we're using about a fifth of the factory. There is plans for the future of Tesla to do other derivatives of the car. So we're doing a Model X, which is an SUV version of this car. And it gives us the, you know, we've got plenty of space here to expand into. There's always been a desire to do more volume, and this basically allows us to be able to expand and grow.
There is, I guess, an advantage of moving into a facility that was an automotive plant and a volume automotive plant at that, because all the bits are in the right place. But there's not a big history of automotive production here in California, is there?
No, there's not. I mean, the Toyota GM joint venture was done, basically set up through government funding to bring automotive manufacturer to the West Coast. There are smaller manufacturers over here, so there's some bus and truck companies, but there is no other car industry in this area. And obviously when Toyota left, it left a bit of a hole for people who lived here, who worked here, because there was a lot of employment here. Mm. You know, we're talking probably up to 10,000 people potentially employed here,
right.
And when this was closed down, then obviously that meant not good things for the area. So when Tesla moved in, you know, it was welcomed with open arms.
When it was the previous ownership then, was it as integrated in terms of the facilities as it is now? Because quite clearly, and we'll see this in a minute, but quite clearly it's got you know, the ability to press metal, to do various different things. Were all of those things here already, or were those, have you had to adapt, if you like, the space to the Tesla way of thinking?
We've had to change it quite a bit, but there always was some level of infrastructure. So there was a stamping plant here, but all the equipment was taken out. So right. We then had to invest in new, and actually we moved one of the biggest stamping machines, transfer lines, from Michigan to here.
Wow.
Which was brought across, I think, by road, but wow, it wouldn't surprise me if it came around by ship. But anyway, it was basically delivered here because it was no longer needed in Michigan because of the volumes that they were going up to at that time. So that was bought over here, and then we've had to invest in a new paint facility because at the time when it was a Toyota factory, we weren't using water-based paints in the industry, so obviously yep, that's changed. We've had to recommission, there's a casting plant here, so we've had to recommission that. We also have a plastics factory here as well, so we actually make our own front and rear fascias, as they're known in North America. America bumper as we know them in the UK. So we basically have got a lot of that infrastructure that we brought in or recommissioned to basically suit our purposes.
But effectively what we've got here, and it's interesting, I'm seeing parallels with what I saw at Toyota in Cologne for the motorsport side of things, where there isn't, it's not like being in the middle of Motorsport Valley in the UK where you can give Cosworth a ring if you need some bits for an engine. It's very much what you're building here is a self-contained unit where raw materials pretty much come in one end and out the other end come out go Tesla at the moment Model S's.
Absolutely, that's exactly what we want to do. So we've got very good vertical integration that allows us to be able to control our own destiny, because a lot of the automotive manufacturers in the US are based on the West Coast, so they're Michigan area, Detroit area, and fortunately we won't have to buy any engine parts from Cosworth because we don't have one.
Of course, yes, I'm missing that out. That's going to keep tripping me up. I can see that as we go around here today. In terms then of, you know, there's lots of bits and pieces of trim and various systems of the cars stacked up here at the moment. How much of that is coming from traditional, if you like, suppliers, and where are they, and how much of that is the car, I've seen pictures of it and you've driven me here in one today. It seems a very well put together car, it seems a very well thought out car. It doesn't seem like you've, I'm going to use a term here that sounds derogatory, and it is, you haven't robbed anybody else's parts bin here, it wouldn't seem.
Absolutely not, no. Everything, or the vast majority of parts that we've got on the car, are Tesla owned.
Right.
So we do have some investment from other OEMs. So Toyota have a small stake in Tesla. Daimler have a small stake in Tesla as well. And that's really because we build their electric cars as well. So that's the important thing. So all RAV4s that are electric are built by Tesla, but what we then have is a reciprocal agreement that we can use some of their parts. So basically what we have is, we have to be standalone, we want to be standalone, yeah, because we are controllers of our own destiny. We do use some general OEM type, so original equipment manufacturer car company type suppliers to supply us, because they know the ropes, they know about the durability, they know about the finishes, they know about corrosion protection, they know about the quality control, they know all of those things. But we've also used some other local suppliers and actually tried to bring them up to the levels that we require for automotive standards here. So there's some local, there's a lot that are Midwest, and then there's a lot that we make ourselves.
And the standards that we're talking about here are for prestige cars. Just sitting in the car on the way here from the airport, one of the things that struck me immediately about the fit and finish in the car that we came over in is that it stands it a level above what I would normally think of American car manufacturer.
Absolutely. I mean, the benchmark was always to be on par with the German manufacturers, so okay, your Audis, your Mercedes, and your BMWs, and that's always been a benchmark for Tesla. You're right that, you know, the general automotive world in America is slightly different in their approach and their requirements, and actually the customer requirements compared to the UK and to Europe. So we basically are erring on the side of a European quality car, but obviously built in North America and designed in North America, and it's all about understanding how to apply certain tolerances, certain materials, and make sure that they meet the requirements that we need to for a prestigious car.
Well, let's see how they're put together. We'll follow the life cycle, if you like, in the factory here of a Model S as we go around with Chris Porritt. We're at the Tesla Motors factory here in California. Well, we're with Chris Porritt here at Tesla, and unmistakably now in an area of the factory that is being used to manufacture cars. And this is obviously a very early stage of manufacture here.
Yeah, so we bring in here, we bring the stamped panels that come through from the press shop through next door, and we start assembling them together here. So there's a lot of robots in here. They've all been painted Tesla red. Normally this supplier supplies them in orange, but we've had them painted in Tesla red to match the white floor. So Tesla colours are white and red.
See, as a Sunderland supporter, I do not have an issue with that at all.
Funny that, we did it specially for you, actually.
Thank you, thank you.
So here we have robots that are bonding panels together. We've got others that are welding. We've got spot welding robots.
We've got robots that are doing the hemming of the panels. So you take the exterior skin of the door, for example, you put it onto the interior, it flanges the edges over and then rolls the edges around all the way around the edge of the panel. So that forms then a fully sealed door.
Now, in terms of the car itself, the structure of it itself, there's very little steel in this car.
Now, the only area of steel is in the B post, and that's really because of there's a side intrusion test that we have to do for safety reasons, quite understandably. So we have a steel part in there, but that really is the only major steel part in the car. Of the body structure, certainly. The rest of it is aluminium. Actually, tell a lie, the front bumper behind the fascia is also a steel part as well.
Now, that obviously that is not unique, but it's still relatively unusual in volume manufacture, although not in prestige cars, because there have been some manufacturers, notably Audi made a big deal about it a few years ago, and other people have come on board since then. Is there any inherent advantages other than the obvious one of weight?
Yeah, there is an obvious advantage of weight. The other thing with aluminium, it does help a little bit in the tooling that you can use.
Oh, okay.
So you don't have to have such hard tooling.
Good
and
point.
For the volumes that we're talking of here as well, 20,000 units is a lot of cars, 20,000 units a year, it's a lot of cars, but in the grand scheme of the higher volume manufacturers, it's not a lot. So we have to think about how we tool parts. And if we're tooling for very high volume steel stampings, then the tools are much more expensive.
Now, people talk about the chassis or the platform of a car, and nowadays quite often they will be shared between different models of cars and sometimes even between different manufacturers. This is all Tesla in here though, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's designed by Tesla, built by Tesla, for Tesla.
Right.
So it is unique, obviously, to us, but also it uses a very unique way of putting it together that would only be applied to an electric car. So, you know, there's a lot of clever work gone into the packaging of the car to make sure that we're optimising everything around the fact that it's an electric car. Has the batteries under the floor, has electric motor in the back, but just underneath the rear seats, basically between the two rear wheels. The charging points are in between the two rear seats, underneath the two rear seats, and then there's no cross car. All of the extrusions run cross car. There's nothing longitudinal at all other than in the sills.
I'm just watching this robot over here work, and it's working on every different axis that you could think of. It's working very quickly, of course. How important is the automation to what you're doing here?
It is important. We're building 400 cars a week at the moment. We will be ramping up before too long to a higher number. But this is all about the learning that we need to do to start thinking about what we're doing in the future as well. So we will build a second car off this platform, as you touched on earlier on. That will be our SUV car that we're doing,
okay.
It's called Model X. And then there will be other things that come afterwards. So it's all about understanding how we can do things at volume and bring it up. Remember, we're a very, very young car company. You know, we've been building this factory for less than a year. So it is understanding a process and also putting loads of things in place that other people just don't do.
I love to see machines working, and I'm looking at I'm looking at a lot of robots going, what's this big one over here that's got almost right up to the ceiling, what's that doing?
So that one's the underframe is basically built first, and it goes onto a rolling production line that you can see in the distance, and then these big robots have picked up the body side, which is built as a sub-assembly.
Right.
So it has the rear fender on it, it has all of the door opening panel basically sitting in there as well, and all the front structure, and that comes down and it places it on the understructure, and then there's another robot that comes in and welds them together and uses also a self-piercing rivet. It's actually self-piercing rivet, it's welded and it's bonded, so it's it uses a few technologies.
Love it. I love it. I could sit and watch this all day, but we've got other things to see, so stay with us as we head through this glorious piece of automotive engineering that is the Tesla factory, never mind the car, here in California.
The inside stories on the teams, suppliers and drivers. This is Inside on RadioLeMans.com.
Well, Chris, we've come into an area that's quiet at the moment because we're in between shifts, but talk us through what we're standing in front of at the moment on this robotised sort of cart thing that has a semi-built car on it.
Yeah, well, we have automatic guided vehicles here that bring the cars basically all the way around the final assembly line. This is the final assembly, so we've been through body and white, we've been through paint, and we're now into final assembly. The car that we've got here, beautiful red colour, as you can see. Well, you can't see because you're on the radio.
Well, that's why you have to describe. That's very good.
Beautiful red colour. And basically, this automatic guided vehicle has the completed body on, has four corners on it as well, which holds the door for the car. So obviously, the same doors go back to the same car.
Yeah.
It's awaiting its interior and it's awaiting its door seals. But as you can see from the floor of the car, it's completely flat. Now, yeah. Very unlike any other, you know, mainstream manufacturer car, if you like, because we've got a flat floor because the batteries are underneath. And there's no transmission tunnel, because why would you need a transmission tunnel if you've got an electric car?
The other thing that I noticed as well, that all the structural bits in here are, from side to side, the transverse, there's nothing that goes down the backbone, because you don't need a backbone. There's nothing that goes from front to back.
No, there is absolutely nothing as you see it here. The only thing actually that does go from front to back is a tube for heating in the back, basically, or right. Air conditioning in the back, and that's it. And that runs underneath the very first cross member that sits underneath the seat. But yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. There is nothing. So it allows us to have full three seats in the back. Mm-hmm. There's no transmission tunnel for you to have to straddle. So it makes it much easier to get in and out of.
No fuel tank, of course, in the boot.
No fuel tank. And in the area where normally on a car you'd have a fuel tank, we've got then the chargers for the high voltage battery. One or two, depending on which option you choose. But basically, yeah, it gives us plenty of space. And there's nothing in the boot, as you say, so we can fit a third row of seats for up to 10-year-old kids that can sit in the back looking out of the back.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Now, the other thing that I've noticed as we've walked through here from the quieter part of the factory that we were in just a few moments ago is it appears that you do pretty much everything here yourself. I mean, there's not a great history of automotive manufacture and assembly here, other than of course what we've talked about with the history of Toyota being in this plant first. So I mean, is that almost as a bit of necessity, or is that down to the ethos of the company?
Well, it is both. We are a relatively low volume manufacturer in North America. 20,000 cars a year is our volume, and compared to the likes of the big three, obviously that's relatively low. So we need to be able to make some components that we can't get sourced otherwise, and also we want to have the control of the parts that we make. And there is a lot of IP in this car as well, some intellectual property that we want to maintain ourselves. Often the case, if you put it outside to a supplier, that then can make its way into other OEMs, and that would mean then that, you know, we lose that competitive advantage that we've got. So you're right, we build pretty much, I don't know percentage wise exactly what it is, but it's down to the levels of details. We stamp our own panels. We machine a lot of our castings. We actually do have our own castings factory here as well, so we do a lot of our castings ourselves. The aluminium panels, as I say, are stamped here. We make the front and rear bumpers, fascias as they're known in North America, because we've got a plastics factory here as well. We build our own electric motors. We stack all of the cells into the battery pack, so we effectively build the battery pack.
Wow.
We make our own ECUs, as you'll see when we go through into the powertrain factory upstairs, from the PCB all the way through to finishing it off.
Okay.
The infotainment module that sits in the centre of the car, so the screen that sits into the centre of the car, yes, we buy the screen in, but we actually build all of the hardware behind that. So it's a most vertically integrated company that I've ever seen in my life, and there's a rationale for that in, as I said, IP and also control of our own destiny.
Got a build sheet sitting on the back of the car there. In common with motor manufacturers, I'm presuming that what we're seeing here, there's three or four white cars, there's a batch of red cars going through, there was a lovely dark grey one a little bit further down as well. I presume that these are all specific to customers.
Yeah, we don't have dealers, so all of our cars are sold through Tesla stores, of which they're dotted at the moment a lot around the US, California, and all over the US basically. And we're then expanding into Europe, so we will open stores in various major cities in Europe. We're setting up a centre in Europe to import cars into Europe from here, and and then, you know, we'll go on to various other parts of the world as well.
I was going to say, what you've described to us sounds like it's quite labour intensive, because you're doing an awful lot of stuff and quite specific and technical, technically difficult work here in one place. And what I'm impressed to see in some ways is the amount of automation that you've got here.
Yeah, we have a lot of robots on the body and white line. As you saw earlier, there's robots that do welding, there's robots that do bonding, there's robots that do all the hemming of the panels as well, so basically fold the edges over on the panel from a door inner to a door outer. And then we have a lovely robot down here that we'll talk about when it starts running again, that puts the glazing into the car, so the front windscreen into the car, and then it comes back and it changes over, a clever little robot that it is, and then puts the seats into the car as well. So it's an amazing sort of use of robots.
And none of the robots talk to us. Shall we have a wander down that way then, and before everything kicks off again and we get in people's way? You said to me off mic that you've just gone through the 10,000th Model S that's being built here, which to me sounds like a big number. You say it's not a big number, because in American terms, and particularly in American automotive terms, we're talking about hundreds of thousands normally of cars. But how are things going to move on beyond that? Because clearly you're not using the full potential of this factory at the moment.
No, actually, of this whole factory at Fremont, we're probably using about a fifth of it. So you can see the opportunity for expansion. We have very, very big plans. We're not just here for the fun of being here. We are an electric car company, but we're a car company that just so happens to be electric rather than the other way around.
Yes.
And the product itself, it appeals to all sorts of people. It doesn't appeal to just the sorts of people that you would expect would buy an electric car, who may be a little bit geeky, a little bit different in the way that they approach life. This is an ordinary car, and we have all ranges of people who buy them. From movie stars to average Joes who've decided that this is going to be the last car that they're going to buy.
And effectively what you've said there actually is it's just flicked over in my mind, because you said that you're a car company, and you are a car company. You're not an electric car company, you're a car company that builds electric cars, clearly. But what I'm also seeing here in the level of investment, the level of attention to detail, the quality of everything that we're seeing, and there's various carpet sets and all that. I love coming around factories, sort of center consoles, rear consoles, the level of quality of everything that goes into it. This is a prestige car. It just happens to have a different powertrain unit than an internal combustion engine of some description.
That's absolutely right. And the other thing that you've touched on, really, with it being an electric car, it's extremely clean. So the environment that we're working in here, drive the cars in and out. We don't have to have tailpipe filters on or anything like that. So the whole place is very clean and tidy.
So your emissions test at the end of the line is dead easy.
Well, the car runs on a rolling road, and that's it. We obviously do the same things that other manufacturers do in checking brakes and ABS and water tests and all those things that we'll see in a minute. But yeah, it is, you know, it is a prestigious car company. There is no question. The attention to detail is absolutely there. There is no question.
Well, it looks like people are going to get back to work here, so let's get out of the way. And where would you like to take us next then, Chris?
I'll show you the clever robot.
All right, okay, let's do that then before everything kicks off. I do like it in white. It looks very good indeed. Now, at the moment, of course, it is only the Model S that we're talking about, and I might be able to twist your arm later on to tell us about other things. But first of all, tell us about this. This is the robot that's clearly set up, because I can see suckers on it to do windscreens, but I can also see that there's front seats there as well.
That's right. So this robot basically reaches down, it'll pick up a front screen, it'll hold the windscreen against the nozzle there that puts the adhesive onto the screen.
Right.
It'll then turn the screen around, so the nozzle doesn't go around the screen, the robot turns the screen around the nozzle. That then puts it into the car, so it'll put the front windscreen into the car. It'll then come back and it'll dock, it'll change its head, and then go over and pick up the seat, put the seat into the car,
come back, pick up the other seat and put the other seat in the car. So it will reach right the way across the centre console, because it goes in through the right-hand side door as we see it here, and it will put in the driver's seat first on a left-hand drive car, obviously, and then it will come back, pick up the passenger seat and put that in afterwards.
Yeah, too clever by half.
Absolutely.
Too clever by half, that is. We're at Tesla in Fremont, California. It's another one of our inside stories, and this time inside a very different looking car company. Well, we've moved to another part of the Tesla factory here at Fremont, California. Chris Porritt is with us, and this car, again, sitting on its dolly, has had its doors fitted, it's had its interiors fitted, it's got glass in, it's starting to look much more like a car. I'm intrigued, Chris, by the detail of what I'm looking at. Quite a large brake disc here, standard brakes with, you know, normal venti discs there. But this upright is quite interesting here. I don't know if you can... It sounds hollow.
It is. It's got a hollow cast upright. It uses a low-pressure die-casting technique, actually. But it's hollow so that we can obviously take mass out of it. But you imagine a hollow part has got high stiffness as well. And because it has a high top wishbone, it means that it has to be stiff, because the top wishbone is sitting on top of the tyre, basically.
And then sort of a more traditional-looking setup at the bottom, except I'm seeing a couple of ball joints down there when I thought I would only see one.
Yeah, so it has a virtual centre lower ball joint. So you can imagine it has two links that run across the car, one diagonally from front to rear, and one directly across the car. So that one takes the lateral forces, the other one is for a brake reaction, basically, and and caster control. But you join
an old-fashioned anti-dive kit.
It does have anti-dive as well.
Yeah.
But basically, if you draw a line between those two joints, those two links, I should say, it'll form a centre of the ball joints that sits outside of the disc of the car. So it means that you can get the ground offset, an important brake stability element of the suspension kinematics, outside of the disc, basically. It allows you to be able to fit a wider disc and a bigger brake package.
And this has got quite a funky upright on there. That's not a McPherson strut, even I know that.
No, it's not a McPherson strut. It's just known as a wide space double wishbone setup, basically, with a virtual centre lower arm.
And the actual damping itself, is that's not a coilover shock either.
No, it has an air spring with a traditional damper, but it's air suspended so that, you know, it gives you more comfort and also ride height control, because the car will lower at speed as well to reduce aero and help you with your range as well. So yeah, there's a lot of clever stuff that goes into this car.
The bit where the engine would normally, I mean, this looks like a normal engine bay. It's just missing an engine, isn't it? I mean, that's a steering rack down there.
It is indeed. So which has electric steering.
Yeah.
And you can see there's a electric powered AC compressor. So that's for the air conditioning, obviously. There's water pumps as well, because the battery compartment itself is water cooled. We use that for two reasons. One is we actually warm it up using the heat from the motor, and obviously we then cool it down. So it's basically to maintain an optimum temperature for the cells in the battery and also the motor.
I notice how low everything is as well. Obviously, you keep that centre of gravity very low. The batteries in that sandwich floor that we talked about earlier, all of these, this componentry is kept very low indeed. Extensive use of aluminium extrusions on both body and indeed on the subframes. But what goes in this hole here then, where there's no engine?
This gives us an excellent opportunity for additional storage. So we were talking earlier about the fact that you can fit five seats in the car and also have two little jump seats in the boot. This basically is your front trunk, or as it's known at Tesla, a frunk.
A frunk. Okay, of course it is. Stop giggling, eh? We like that a lot. I mean, it's a clever car, and it's a clever car not just because it's electrically powered, but does the fact that the electric power is there give you the opportunity to package some of the things slightly differently then?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, you take away, you're not talking just about an engine. You're talking about an engine, a transmission, driveline. You're talking fuel tank, fuel pipes, exhaust pipes. All of that lot is A, very expensive, B, very heavy, C, it obviously is complicated. It's expensive to tool, it's expensive to sign off, it's expensive to test, and then there's the emissions thing that we touched on as well, plus
it means that it just gives us a bit more space in the car. Mm-hmm. So actually, you know, this car's designed as an electric car. There are other cars that are electric that are effectively, they're designed as a normal car,
yes,
that are then made into electric cars.
Yes.
And that means that you've got some compromises that you don't necessarily have to deal with.
So whereas this has always been designed as an electric car.
Exactly. So we've taken all those compromises away and designed it as an electric car.
But it looks, you know, again, and I'll come back to this, it looks quite normal, if I can use that word. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It looks like a car. It looks like it could have an internal combustion engine. I mean, was that deliberate in the Model S that you said, right, we need a four-door car, it needs to have luggage capacity, and, well, actually, there's no reason why it can't, at least from the outside, look like a regular prestige car?
Well, the thing is, I think if you want to sell an electric car in any sort of numbers, you don't want to put anybody off, so it has to appeal to all.
Yeah, all right, yeah, yeah.
And people have an expectation of what a car looks like, and if you decide that an electric car needs to look different, then you're maybe not necessarily meeting those expectations.
Definitely.
So it's all about meeting the requirements that the customer has. And they don't necessarily want to stand out. The car isn't a striking looking car, but it doesn't stand out as being something a bit odd.
Yeah.
And that's where the Tesla design works really well, and you know, it looks striking and it's not anything other than a beautiful looking five-door car.
Yeah. Now, this is springs and dampers on the back of here.
So this one's a coil sprung car. We have two suspension options, basically.
Right.
Well, we actually have three, but we have two suspension options, which is coil sprung or air sprung. Coil sprung's on a base model, Model S, and then we have air suspension on the performance car.
Okay.
And then we actually do a sports suspension package as well called Performance Plus.
All right. Now, and this, we're looking at the back end of this car now. As I say, coilover shocks, well-known manufacturer that's involved in racing there. Interesting rear end, because of course we've still got drive shafts in there that you haven't got rid of, and I can see you, well, if I could see underneath the aero underneath, which has got, I mean, you'd not be allowed this on most racing cars, because you've got effectively a diffuser at the back that goes back what, a metre and a half, maybe a little bit further than that, but there is a diff under there, Chris.
There is indeed a diff in there. So the electric motor drives the rear wheels. It has of the order of 450 horsepower. The package of it is tiny, and we'll look at the motor when we go to the powertrain area. But the motor is tiny. It has a 10-to-1 reduction gear. So the motor turns up to 16,000 RPM. Reduction gear driving to the rear wheels. Has a diff, as any sports car would have, or performance car, or any car, I should say. And it has a completely flat floor that you've touched on earlier. Now, that's one of the advantages of this car, is it has a flat floor, nothing intrudes in that. So, as we said earlier, no exhaust, no fuel system, no pipes, jumble underneath the car, which means that combined with all the work we did on the top side of the car, it has class-leading aero. So it's got drag 0.24 CD.
Oh, wow. That's pretty impressive, actually. And the suspension here at the back... multi-link, would you say?
It has a multi-link rear suspension, yeah. It's got a multi-link rear suspension, which, as you can see, the tooling route that we've used for, especially the top two links, they're actually extruded aluminium parts.
Yes.
That mean that they're the same both sides. Also, the tooling's relatively inexpensive. And, you know, they're just cut to size.
That's genius. It really is genius. And I keep coming back to this fact that, you know, everybody knows my scepticism about... total electric cars. This is a total electric car that has a traditional appearance. It clearly has the facilities within the car, and we'll talk about that when we get the car. Now, there's a car going for a road test. And what can you hear in the background? Tire noise. That's the only thing. No smell of exhaust, nothing else. That's a bit spooky, actually. All right, what's next, Chris?
We'll go and see the battery installation as it goes into the car. So that's the only thing we stuff up into the car is the...
Because that normally would happen with the whole powertrain. And certainly it's factories that I've been to at them in the past. And I do love car factories. I love factories. It doesn't matter whether they're washing bottles or making cars. But normally what you would do in some way, shape or form, the engine, the gearbox, the transmission, possibly even a prop shaft all bolted together, would get thrown in underneath the car. Well, clearly you're not going to need to do that with this Tesla.
No, we stuff the rear suspension into the car from underneath, and then we'll just go over to the battery installation cell here, and then we put the battery in.
All right, one down here. Okay.
No, it's not here, sorry.
Right, okay.
So you can see there's a big trolley that comes in underneath the car, so that has the battery pack in it. You can see it's about 3.5-4 inches deep.
That whole thing on top of that trolley, there's a flat trolley that looks almost like a big draftsman's table, but laying flat, and on top of that, 2.5-3 inches, maybe a little bit more, that whole sort of beigey coloured piece of material there, that is the battery pack.
That is the battery pack.
Wow.
Yeah, so that is an 85 kilowatt hour battery pack that gets stuffed into the car. And we were talking in inches, obviously, here, because we're in America. The equivalent would be 75 centimetres.
Right.
75. I can't remember.
Don't try and do that. You're here now. Don't do that. The question, of course, that is always asked about electric vehicles of any shape, size or description is the weight of the batteries and the effect that they have on the dynamics of the car. What I see there is something that's very thin, spread out over a large area, and clearly as low, it could not be any lower in the car unless you actually let it, put little casters on it and let it run along the ground underneath the car.
Indeed, I mean it is the lowest point in the car, and it is the single heaviest part of this car, obviously. So having it sitting underneath the floor means that centre of gravity of the car is very low. Actually it's around 450 millimetres, which is about what sports cars are. So that's why the car has a very dynamic feel. It has very little roll when you do high-ish G corners, and it just gives you a real feeling of security when you're driving it, and a real sort of positive feel to the car.
The battery technology itself, maybe we can talk about a little bit later, but that is not anything that nobody doesn't know about. We're not trying something out here. This is proven technology.
Yeah, they're lithium-ion cells that are used in other electric and hybrid vehicles. They're used, obviously, there's been quite a lot of discussion about Boeing aeroplanes with the lithium-ion battery cells, but the important thing is to maintain the temperature in them. We discussed that earlier when we were talking about the cooling, but it's all about making sure that you're keeping things A, cool, and B, isolated from each other. So, you know, it's all about understanding how to make the batteries work in all conditions, and that's what we've mastered here.
And how much, then, is temperature a factor in battery life? We're here in California, it's lovely, nice ambient temperature, and over the years, sometimes, because California is such a big market for the automotive industry, things like, for example, the catalytic converter got imposed on everybody because it was a good answer for here where the ambient temperatures were so high. In Europe, where the ambient temperatures are a lot lower, perhaps not such a great idea. What about battery technology for the same thing? Because clearly it's going to be a damn sight colder in the UK and parts of Europe than it would be here.
Yeah, batteries do work better when it's warmer, definitely. Yeah. But we have a heating system within the battery. So we have a preheater that if you wanted to, you could... Actually, there's an iPhone app that you can set your car to preheat.
Of course there is.
Or you can set it to pre-cool if it's a hot environment. Whilst it's on charge or whilst it's not on charge. Obviously, if you're setting it to preheat, you'll use some of the battery power. But basically, that brings it up to as close to an operating range as you can do. Now, when it's very cold, we actually have an active aero system on the car as well that shuts off some flats to the cooling ducts. So it means that it then makes sure that the car, you know, maintains that optimum temperature for as long as it can.
So what I'm building a picture here. The more we talk about this, the more we look at the car in various states of undress. Actually, really, really interesting. But I'm building a picture here of a car that is stylish, but in a traditional sense of the word, that is competent in a number of different areas, as you would expect from a premium product, and is a car that is not just built as an electric car in a quirky way for a single market, i.e. for here in California.
This is a worldwide car, yeah. And, you know, we are launching the car in Europe. We actually launched the Geneva Motor Show a couple of months ago, and second half of this year you'll see cars in Europe, there's no question.
Okay, where are we going next?
We'll go over to the powertrain area that we talked about earlier, and that will really complete our work. So we've done body and white, we've done final assembly, we'll do powertrain. I'll show you a little bit about where the batteries are. We could do a quick wander over to look at the road test because it's done inside.
Of course.
Because why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And then there's a water test area as well. So pretty much after that, we'll have covered most things.
Okay. Chris, thanks for the moment. You're listening to an Inside special. We're at Fremont, California, and we are looking at Tesla and getting the the look behind the scenes of exactly how these very innovative cars are put together.
This is Inside on RadioLeMans.com. The inside stories on the teams, suppliers and drivers.
Well, we've come into another area that, as you can probably hear, is a hive of activity. And this, Chris, is what?
This is the powertrain assembly area. So Tesla basically has two divisions, although they're not divided, obviously, but two divisions, which is vehicle side, which I look after, and also the powertrain side. The powertrain side is really all the clever bits within a Tesla. And I'm not saying that the stuff that we do isn't clever, because it certainly is. But it is all of the batteries, power electronics, motors, drivetrain, so the transmission, and also all of the electronics on the car.
So when you talk about power here, you're talking about power in a much broader sense than you would be on an internal combustion engine car, because effectively everything here is powered electrically, so it's everything other than the structure of the car is actually powertrain.
Yeah, I guess the simple way of looking at it is anything with electrons is pretty much powertrain, so except for the transmission, which is obviously a mechanical device, pretty much anything that is electrically related is part of the powertrain team.
When people sit down and think about designing an electric car, clearly the motive power system to drive it forward is one part of it. But that actually is only one part of it. We shouldn't think that's the be-all and end-all, because the point that you made earlier is this car was never designed as anything other than an electric car. It's not as if it's been transformed or had to be changed over from an IC internal combustion car to an electric car. So in terms of electrical systems within the car, what I would think that means you have to look a little bit differently at it, because it's all electric, isn't it? So things like ECUs and how the electrical systems talk to each other must be something that has to be completely integrated.
Absolutely, it is. I mean, it uses similar sort of low voltage 12 volt CAN architecture that you'd see in a normal car. But it also then has the high voltage side, which is for the electric motor and the battery system and the charging system as well. But the low voltage side is more like a traditional car. The big difference is we have the big screen, as you've seen in the car when I collected you earlier, in the centre of the car. And that really is your entry to the electronics of the car. And also that is your communication with the car and the car's communication with you.
Yeah.
And we also do, the car can also be updated on the fly. So, for example,
I know I've been on a long flight, but even for me, you can update the car on the move.
Yeah, so the company, so Tesla, can send an update to the car and it will come up on the screen, generally when it's stationary, but it'll come up on the screen saying basically, do you want to have a firmware upgrade? Do you want to have a software upgrade? And you select yes, no. You can decide if you want to leave it to do it overnight. You can read the information that's in there. So that might be anything from a change to the way that the battery heats up to the way that the maps are updated on the big screen. And so we can do that. We can basically update any car anytime. And so all cars have the opportunity of being identical electrically and electronically. So they basically have an infinite life and the ability for us to update at will whenever we like.
And without giving away any trade secrets, that's done what? By the internet, is it?
Yes.
So mobile internet in the car as you're driving along?
Yes. So you can, as a passenger, you'll be able to browse the internet as you go along.
Yeah.
And also, as Tesla, we get agreement from each customer that we can have information that they're using. We know where every single car is all the time. So if a customer has a problem, if he gets in touch with us, we know exactly where that car is to go and help him. Or if they've had an accident, we can actually find out what's happened and make sure that he gets help.
And presumably as well there, in terms of telematics from the car, being able to access that information, if there is an issue of whatever it is, somebody rings you up, you go, just hang on a second, Mr. Hindoff, yes, I can see what we need to do there. We'll have you go, or I could send you a new bit of code.
Absolutely, yeah, so we could update it exactly whenever the customer requires it. And it's really, ultimately, it's their choice. It makes, what I was saying, makes it sound like, you know, we just willy-nilly will go along
and update
the car. You know, we will give the customer the choice of doing an update, and we'll explain to them exactly what's coming. And actually, if you read on Tesla's internet, on the blog, we actually will tell them that we're about to do a release of software and tell them what the changes are.
So for example, if you had a car in Europe, and I don't know if this is possible, but I'm just going to give an example, and you wanted to update your stereo system so that it had a something
Bluetooth connectivity.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Yes, we could do that. Yeah.
That's very clever. That is very clever indeed. We're standing in front of a bit of a Tesla.
Yeah, this is a rolling chassis. We've got this really here as a demonstration piece in the powertrain area. So it basically shows the layout of the battery, the motor, the chargers that sit underneath the rear seats, and also a sort of display of each of the separate major components of the powertrain system as well.
And now that I've been downstairs, it never actually gets to this stage downstairs, does it? It would have had other bits on before it got wheels and the front bumpers and things like this. So obviously this has been made for a display purpose. But I tell you what, it does show you, Chris, just what we've been talking about all the way through here. The elegant simplicity of the chassis itself, being low, being flat, being efficient in where all of the heavier components are.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, you've got the motor sitting at the back, so you've got a lot of mass density around the area where the power is transmitted, so that helps with traction, obviously. And then at the front end, we actually have a slight bulge in the front of the battery pack to allow a bit more mass to be distributed at the front. So, but the majority of the mass is held within the wheelbase by standard vehicle dynamics. Point of reference, if you like, you always want to do that if you can, but this has absolutely nothing beyond the front wheelbase at all, other than a little bit of cooling system, and then we talk about the trunk that sits in the front, so really the mass is all contained within the wheelbase.
When you see it like this, you realise how very much a wheel at each corner design it is, and how much you are optimising what is going to be, if we let me explain, there's no sides on this car, so I'm literally looking at a four wheel chassis that looks like a stripped down beach buggy, effectively, with no screen or anything like that, and it's got the front suspension turrets on it. It doesn't even have the rear suspension turrets on it, but you've optimized what would be the passenger cell in the middle of that, Chris, and it, like I say, it's a wheel at each corner, so dynamically, weight low, wheel at each corner, you're on a winner straight away.
Absolutely. You know, and the
car, from a pure engineering point of view, which definitely is obviously what you're excited about.
Yeah, that's my attraction to the car, and it's my attraction to the company, is the opportunity that gives us. And, you know, the fact that the car defies its mass. You know, it still has a very heavy battery in it. There's no question about that. But it defies its mass because all of that mass is low down in the car.
Okay. Can we have a quick look at some of these little components here without... Fortunately, we're not taking pictures of them, so there's nothing here. Battery charger, one or two, as you've talked us through. Again, the manufacturer, the design of these are all done in-house. There's a Tesla logo on the circuit board there. And again, that's all here and all optimised for this car. You're not having to, again, transform something, if you pardon the pun, that is being built for something else.
No, absolutely not. This is designed and built at Tesla. So the only thing that's not built here is the printed circuit board. Everything else is made here. So we put the parts on the circuit board. You can see with the charger, it's also water cooled as well. So that's how we warm up the batteries and also then apply the sort of temperature stabilisation across the whole system.
Drive inverter, obviously direct to alternating current. Inverter, which is delivering the power effectively, or at least controlling that power delivery.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's a really, really neat system. So it's no
tiny.
Bigger than the size of the motor, yeah. And we obviously use three of these drive inverters to make up the complete pack.
And again, designed, conceived, and put together right here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
brilliant. I love it. Let's move down. This says rotor.
So that's the centre of the motor, not Japanese for motor.
Okay. But also rotors over here can mean brake discs, and that doesn't look like a brake disc to me.
So
that is the very core of the motor, is it?
Exactly. So that's the rotor that sits in the centre of the motor.
And that is the bit that it sits...
The stator that sits on the outside. The stator goes around the outside, which has all the windings for the electric motor.
So although we're talking about a car that is very different in its... and how it's been conceived to drive electrically completely, we're talking about a car that, as we've said before, has a traditional look to it. It does what a traditional car would do. And actually, I dare say that there's some of the IP here that's very clever and very cutting edge, but what I'm not seeing here is anything that I'm scared of. I recognise, I can point to these things, and I think most people would be able to point to these things, even if they're not mechanically sympathetic, and know what they were.
Yeah, they're you know, it's clever, no question, but it's nothing more than, you know, a normal electric motor.
Yeah.
It's just a very well-designed and cleverly designed electric motor.
And, of course, what that gives you going forward is a car that, maintenance-wise, isn't going to be difficult to keep on the road.
No, absolutely not. The only thing that you have to maintain is brake fluid needs to be changed every 3 years. You need to change the brake pads as and when they're worn out, and with the regenerative braking that the car has, you don't use the brakes that often, as you'll find when you drive the car. The only oil in the car is in the transmission.
Which is here.
And to be honest, that really doesn't need changing very much because it's not massively loaded. So there's an argument that says that the cars don't really need to come for service at all.
Now, this is the gearbox, which is a single speed with a drop gear, as you mentioned, a reduction ratio, and no reverse gear then? That is just literally turns it the wrong way by the electric motor?
Yeah, just turn the motor backwards.
Yeah.
So, like your Skelectric car, although your Skelectric car can't actually go backwards, you basically just turn the motor backwards, the car goes backwards.
And eventually, of course, it all goes into this drive unit that we were looking at downstairs, which I think actually looks not dissimilar to a normal, you know, 6 or 7 speed transaxle unit that you would find. There'd obviously be a whacking great area for a prop shaft to go into there,
yep,
and drive shafts coming out of it. It's not dissimilar in size or in mass, I wouldn't have thought.
No, I mean, it's actually very similar sort of size to probably a transverse transaxle. So yep, nothing too major. The big difference is it's having the power.
The inverter.
The big difference, of course, is it's got the power inverter on the side of it.
Yeah.
So
that is clever because it's balancing out the motor on the other side in terms of mass.
Well, it balances out in mass. It also balances out in package as well. So, you know, it's just a really, really neat and efficient package.
Is there any torque effect from the motor itself when it's turning? Because obviously it's mounted transversely, so does it either lift or lower the car?
Yeah, it'll have a reaction about drive shaft center line. So
right,
obviously the mounts that we see here basically are to react those drive torques.
Right.
So yeah, there is, but
because the torque, the massive advantage, of course, and which I know about electric motors, is the torque is instantaneous, and seems the torque curve isn't a curve, it just goes straight up, basically.
Yeah, and remember that it's got a 10-to-1 multiplication as well with
yeah,
the drop gear. You know, it's got 600 newton meters of torque.
Yeah.
So you can do the math, or
yeah,
math as they say here.
Yeah, incorrectly. Amazing. Amazing. And I tell you what, I know this is in the drivetrain area, but this stripped down chassis that we're looking at here, I think that is the most stunning illustration of just how clever what is underneath this car is, to see it without its sides on, and just to see the actual suspension and the layout of the wheels and where they actually sit within the chassis of the car. I can't wait to drive one.
Well, look forward to having a go.
Well, we're having a good look around the Tesla manufacturing facility here in California, and Chris Porritt is our guide. And I've been to a few car plants in various parts of the world, building various different makes, manufacturers, even levels of car, whether it be a volume car, prestige car. What I've never seen is an area like I'm looking at the moment, which has a wooden floor, and well, I don't even know. There's lots of light. I'm presuming this is some kind of final sign-off. But Chris, tell me exactly what's going on here.
So this is basically where the car is taken from the automatic guided vehicle, and it's put onto this bamboo floor,
right,
where it goes through final inspection. So
and that really is bamboo wood, is it?
It is bamboo, yeah.
Right, okay.
It has a moving track floor, so basically every car comes through here for paint quality inspection, or the shut line inspection, fit and finish. And then it basically runs down here before it then goes through water test and road test inside.
You might not be able to answer this, but I've seen lots of areas like this in other car factories, and this is slightly raised. I can understand why you might want to do that. But why the bamboo floor?
It's almost like a stage. That's the reason. So it's I don't know the logic of why it's bamboo. I would imagine there was probably a reason for it, and we'd have to look into that. But it is, you know, it's a quality stage that the car comes off of. Customers come and see their cars here. We did a very big presentation when we built the first few cars,
right,
and it was all done here on the bamboo floor. So it is, you know, it's a signature part of the end of the process for Tesla.
I like the idea of being a stage. I like getting their little 15 minutes of fame as they come through.
Absolutely, they did. Yeah, at least 15 minutes. Yeah.
Love it. Okay, so then what happens after that?
We've got
wander around here. The other thing I've just noticed as well, by the way, and of course, it makes perfect sense. But until you think about it, you don't notice it so much. There's nobody wearing overalls here.
No, everybody does have Tesla uniforms, so yes, they all have red t-shirts and cargo pants. But no, there's no overalls, because why would they? They don't get dirty because the car's clean.
So there's obviously no fluids in the car other than water,
brake fluid, the coolant for which is basically an ethanol glycol, just like you'd use in any car.
Okay.
Bit of
grease in some of the joints and the bearings and things like that.
I guess a little bit, but not a great deal more than that.
It's amazing how clean it is, and of course you don't realise when we were talking about what's not there, like the engine, the gearbox, the transmission. That's something else that's not there that you'd find in a traditional motor vehicle plant.
Absolutely correct. So, I mean, you can see here we have suspension geometry. So we have two rigs here for setting the suspension. Generally, this is a bottleneck in most factories. So we've got two of them to make sure that we can get through the cycle time. The car goes through there, does a brake test to make sure that it's all the ABS functions are working as they should do. And it basically sets the limits for the function. They have a water test over at the end there, which is a big glass facility, really, that the car goes into and does water test. And it's glass so that we can see it from outside. It's useful so you can see how it's going through the test and also if there's any traumas there.
But here is something that I've never seen before in a car factory. I've been to places where, in fact, I've even driven cars down various areas that look like this. This looks like what I'd normally expect to see outdoor, a paving test, a cobbles test, etc., etc. All of the harsh NVH, noise, vibration and harshness test. But you normally see this outside.
Yeah, well, we built it inside because we can run the cars inside. And also it means that the guys don't have to go outside and get sunburned.
Yeah, because it's not about getting wet here.
No, we don't have very much rain. We have 300 days of sun a year, which is quite nice. We do actually have a test track, so every car does an amount of mileage around the test track as well to check for, you know, brake function and this sort of thing. But this really is for squeaks and rattles, fit and finish, to make sure that that's done before they go outside.
And that's great. When you think about it, it's brilliant, because obviously it's a zero emissions car, so you can do that inside without having... I mean, imagine having to do this even in a small factory, the kind of extraction you would need to make that. You can do it here, and then it can be rectified without it even having
absolutely
gone outside.
I mean, you touched on it, absolutely. Extraction. There is no need for extraction.
No.
The only area where we have extraction is in the paint booths and in the paint repair area, but that is it. You don't need extraction for anything else.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant stuff. Indoor test track, obviously, that's the next thing.
Well, we've got quite a lot of space. Maybe we could do that.
Thank you, Chris. This is the final stage then before the cars are signed off here at Fremont in California for Tesla, and we're on an inside special here for RadioLeMans.com. Well, I always enjoy doing these inside stories where we get behind the velvet rope in some respect of an interesting project, either in the automotive or in the motorsport world. I'm not sure what I was really expecting today, but I've been completely blown away by what I've seen. Chris Porritt has been showing us around Tesla Motors here in Fremont, California. And I mean, the first thing that I've got to say, Chris, is that the size of the place obviously knocks you out. I've been to car plants in the past, or roughly the same size, this may be a little bit smaller. This is not what I was expecting for Tesla, but what it shows for me is that there is ambition here, that there is a genuine passion for not only the models that you are building at the moment, but for the whole concept that is Tesla.
Absolutely, and the first time I came to visit here, which was not that long ago, basically, obviously before I started here, but I got that overriding feeling of passion and enthusiasm for the product, and also this amazing ability to think beyond today. So we're already working in the future with an electric car like this, but the potential for the product and for the way that we work here is amazing. I won't say unlimited, because that would just be ridiculous, but it is amazing. There is so much scope for what we can do, as well as what we do now.
And ultimately, is that the Tesla philosophy then? That, it would have been relatively easy to build an electric car. Other people do it. Large companies and small companies sell them in very small numbers, almost bespoke. That would have been the easy route in some respects for Tesla, wouldn't it?
It would, but there was always, and you will have heard the mantra from my boss, who's our company CEO, Elon Musk, and that is, we're here for the long term. We're not here to just do a car for a period of time. We're here for the long term, and that means we have to be serious about what we do. You'll experience the car. You'll realise how serious you are when you experience the car. It is a car that just so happens to be electric, but it's a prestigious car that happens to be electric, and it's a very desirable product. You look at it standing there, we've got a red car sitting here that you're going to take away, and it is a beautiful looking car.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you want to own one? Why wouldn't you want to tell somebody that actually, you know, I've got this amazing car, but you know what, it's electric. So you don't have to feel embarrassed about it. It is just something that has a passion and a desire that you want to own.
And that, I think, is the overriding thing that has come across when you've shown me around here today, that what we are building here is a motor car, and in common with other prestige motor cars, you are putting life and soul and emotion and passion into this vehicle. Actually, ultimately, at the end of the day, how it's driven along, the power goes to the back wheels, it could be to the front wheels, it could be four-wheel drive. The power goes to the back wheels, in that case, it sounds relatively traditional. How that power's been generated almost, is not what's at issue here.
No, it isn't. No, it, you know, it's...
That's
it's,
just becomes a choice then.
Absolutely, it does become a choice. So you choose to have a car, you choose to have all the benefits that you have with having an electric car as well. So you never have to fill it up with gasoline. You never have to smell of petrol. You never have to go to a filling station. Imagine if you had to charge your phone, and every time you charge your phone, you had to go to a different place rather than stay at home.
Yeah.
How dumb's that?
Yeah.
So you can charge this at home. You charge it overnight. You go to a supercharger station, you can charge it for free. So the endless thought that comes through your mind when you experience this product is, why don't other people do this?
Right, okay, so here's the car. You're going to let me take it away, brave man. It looks resplendent there. What do I need to do that's any different? What do I need to be aware of? What should I take away from this, and what should I be looking to come back with when I bring you the car back in just as pristine a condition in a few days' time?
I think the one thing we'd like you to do is just experience it.
Yeah.
So, drive it. Experience it. Tell us what you think. Tell us how you feel that the all the interactions that you have with the car. Now, the majority of the interactions are either through the steering wheel, through the pedals, or through the 17-inch touchscreen in the middle. There are actually very few other controls that are in the car. You obviously have indicator stalks and the things that you need for operating the wipers if you need them in California. But it is very much your interaction with the car is through the things that you touch. Now, that's very different experience to all other cars, because you won't see buttons and switches. You won't see rotary knobs. You won't see a center console that you have to open. You'll see a very different experience, which actually will make you feel like it's natural, and you'll go back to a normal car and you'll think, why have I got so many things in there?
So what you're seeing is, now take this car away, John, enjoy it, bring it back, and then we're going to spoil you for normal cars for life.
That's why I'm here.
That's a great way to finish. Chris, thank you very much indeed for letting us see around here. I can't wait to get started in this. And of course, you will hear the experience of the Tesla Model S here on RadioLeMans.com. But for the moment, Chris, thanks very much. And we'll say bye for now from here at Tesla Motors.
The inside stories on the teams, suppliers, and drivers. This is Inside on RadioLeMans.com.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemon.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world.